Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Time for your March Madness fix.
Fox, baseline, up for the shot, dive, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over, Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot, yes, it's the shot by Tate George, wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does. Oh!
Smart takes the shot.
Oh! Indiana wins the championship.
Oh, so now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court.
All I need is a miracle.
It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win.
Gone.
Oh! They did it.
Bryce Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
One shining moment you knew.
Wittenberg. Oh, that's a long way.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gets it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good! And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
And greetings, everyone. Welcome to Budweiser's weekday sports feed on your home of the Fighting Irish and the NCAA basketball tournament, including a couple of more first four games from Dayton, Ohio. 6:30, we will join the coverage of Westwood One here on WSBT Radio. We've got Grambling and Montana State, a battle of 16 seeds. In the first game at 6:40, the winner gets the chance to knock off Purdue for a second straight year as the number one seed. Don't think that's going to happen. And then in the nightcap, it is 10 seeds that are squaring off. So we've got plenty of good action coming your way here on WSBT Radio with Colorado taking on Boise State. My name is Darren Pritchett. I'm joined by Eric Hansen, the Hall of Fame writer, publisher, and editor of InsideIndySports.com. He covers Notre Dame athletics for the Rivals Network. And normally, Eric is number one in the Rivals Network in terms of clicks on his chats weekly. You're number one this week for a different story and has nothing to do with football. So please, indulge us.
It was, thank you. And I'm at the kids' table today if you're on the Twitch app. We have a low chair. Excuse me.
Now you're all choked up. Okay.
That's right. So
deep breath.
I did a story on a 6'5 center from Ukraine who plays her basketball at Long Island Lutheran High School in Brookville, New York. They're the number one high school team in the country, and in 2.5 months, she will be enrolling at Notre Dame and will be an addition to next year's team and really kind of a missing puzzle piece,
yeah.
A dominant 6'5 center. You know, Dan Olson, who does the All-Star Girls Report, a recruiting analyst, called her the best center to come out of high school basketball in the last 4 or 5 years. It's exciting, and she was exciting to talk to. Just her demeanor, her story about what's going on with her family, spread out in three different countries right now.
Oh, my.
And just how she will fit. And, you know, her team played Hannah Hidalgo's team last year when Hannah was a senior and Kate was a junior. Mm. And so I got comments on each other. You know, Hannah gave me some good stuff about Kate and what she expects from her next year. But really fun story to do, and really grateful I had a chance to do it.
And you can find that story at InsideIndySports.com. Is it too early to promote your podcast, or you want to wait till it's recorded?
We'll go ahead and promote
okay,
it.
Okay, do.
We have been doing this podcast since we were at the Tribune, so it's maybe 5 years old, 5 or 6 years old. We have only once strayed from a football guest. We've always had a football guest. When Notre Dame went to the College World Series, we had a baseball guest on. And tomorrow we stray away from football for a second time, and we are going to have Hannah Hidalgo, awesome, a recently anointed Associated Press first-team All-American.
Incredible.
So looking forward to that.
Okay, so watch for that later in the week at right. InsideIndySports.com. And as Eric mentioned, Hannah did pick up first-team All-American status today from the Associated Press as a freshman. As a freshman, that is something that does not happen very often.
It's happened five times, and two of them happened today. Juju Watkins from USC and Hannah Hidalgo. And then there's been three others in the whole history of the AP All-American team, which goes back 30 years. So that's quite an honor. So, you know, for somebody that was going to be kind of a placeholder until Olivia Miles got better, then became so much more than that. And then next year they're going to be playing together. And Olivia was a second team All-American last year. So that's pretty exciting.
All right. Check it all out at InsideIndySports.com. 513, Eric and Darren with you on WSBT Radio. I know you don't know the answer to this. If you do, I'm thoroughly impressed. But what were you and what was everybody doing 43 years ago today? Many in our listening audience were not on Earth as of yet. Shows you how old we're getting. So we remember this. 43 years ago today.
So it would have been 1981.
Correct. Yes.
I know. I think that's the year MTV started, but I don't think it was in the spring. And it was, the first video was Video Killed the Radio Star. I don't know.
All right. Give a listen. This is how it sounded. This is the TV call on NBC Sports 43 years ago today.
And there are 8 seconds to go. Ames against Paxson. Five seconds. Inside. Ames scores with 2 seconds. 1 second on the clock. It is all over. It is all over. But it looked like Notre Dame was going to have Kelly Tripucka as the hero. The
what
hero's
a great
banner
drive,
is lost by Notre Dame, and the hero's banner goes to Danny Ainge. Frank Arnold and Brigham Young have won this glamour game 51-50. All right.
There you go. Notre Dame had the game won, 8 seconds left, but Danny Ainge was allowed to go coast to coast, and the finger roll over the top of the front of the rim. He knocked it down with just 3 seconds left on the clock, and BYU stunned the Fighting Irish in the NCAA tournament. Probably one of the more painful Digger Phelps losses in the NCAA tournament.
Very, very good two-sport athlete. He was a big-time baseball prospect as well.
Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep.
Had his baseball card as a kid and did pretty well on those great Celtic teams in the 1980s. As a Celtic fan, I can remember the PA announcer going through the starting lineups like it was yesterday. Edegaard from Brigham Young, number 44, Danny Ainge. And, of course, Bird, Mikhail Parrish, and DJ Dennis Johnson. So that was 43 years ago today. BYU stuns Notre Dame in the tournament on that coast-to-coast drive by good old Danny Ainge. All right, let's get to some topics to get the program started. Spring practice back into the forefront at the University of Notre Dame today. Media allowed to watch practice today. So, Eric, let's dig into your thoughts on what you witnessed today. We will start on the offensive side of the football. Let me throw out one topic first off. The Sun Bowl MVP was at football practice today. Jordan Faison, who is focusing on lacrosse, but put on the other golden helmet today.
Yeah, we see, we had a full practice to watch the first practice. This is practice number two after a 13-day hiatus, and we'll be pretty regular from this point on. But we see stretching in the first five periods, which are mostly drills. But you see some things. You know, we're seeing who are the people to beat on the offensive line. We saw Steve Angeli take some number one reps today after Riley Leonard was the first guy out with the ones. We'll see that alternate, I think, throughout spring. Didn't see as many things that showed off the wide receivers' speed today. We saw some interesting observers both on both sides of the ball do the offensive one first. Joe Alt and Blake Fisher were there because they have pro day tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Hartman was there, so they were all kind of taking things in today. And then we had our interviews with offensive line coach Joe Rudolph on the offensive side of the ball and some of the offensive players. I spent my time with Charles Jagaza, and super interesting guy. His approach to holding on to the left tackle spot that he took over for the Sun Bowl kind of as a surprise, and he is an absolute film fanatic. In fact, he was bummed out because of his media obligations and because of class coming up at 11 a.m., he couldn't watch and criticize himself right after the session. So he had to put that on hold. But, you know, it was really interesting to hear some of the thoughts from offensive line coach Joe Rudolph. Emil Wagner was there talking about, you know, his battle to gain weight. 8,500 calories on some days. My goodness. And he's still, you know, it's still a slow climb there. Tosh Baker was another one of the interviews today. So, again, it was more drill work. It wasn't as exciting as the first day. We'll have some more full practices. It just wasn't today. We did see stretching. That's always exciting.
Thrilling, to say the least.
It is different. They do stretch differently with the new.
I honestly was going to ask you that.
It is different. And I will say this, too. In talking to Charles Jagaza, I said, you know, what is Lauren Landau's, or Landau is how you pronounce it, Lauren Landau's plan for you, because he's doing a lot more individual and specific. And he said, you know, it feels like there's a whole organizational shift in the approach in which they do this, that there's more emphasis on nutrition. And I think, you know, explosiveness and speed with him more than maybe like where you hear of the exhausting workouts and stuff. It's more precision type workouts, because I remember Aiden Gobira, when he was a freshman, I think he meant to say that they were grueling workouts, but he called them gruesome.
Kind of like Bob Diaco referencing Freddy Krueger, right?
Yeah. So that was the offensive side of the ball today.
I want to get your thoughts and maybe handicap the chances of a bigger role this year for this player, who I know you are a big fan of, and you were a big fan of his all last offseason. Where do you think things stand for Billy Shrouth, an interior offensive lineman, as we look ahead to 2024? Because you believe he's got the skill set to be not just a really good offensive lineman, but a difference-making offensive lineman.
Yeah, he does. And it was interesting to hear Joe Rudolph talk today about him, because Billy Shrouth last spring, the reason why he was running with the ones was that talent was apparent. And when they were kind of going at slower increments, that talent showed itself every day. Then things started to speed up in fall camp, and that's when he got overtaken by a, you know, older set of offensive guards, Rocco Spindler and Pat Coogan. Well, Billy Shrouth is not having the problem with going fast anymore. He's retaining that. So I think the true talent is showing off. So I think when you look at that group, if you were like, you know, picking, I don't know.
On the playground,
you would probably pick Billy Shrouth first. out of all the linemen at all the positions right now. Charles Jagger's a maybe someday. You go that route, but right now I think Billy Schrauf is the one that probably is going to be, you know, the standout on that line this year.
He looks the part.
He does.
He's massive.
He talks the part.
Oh,
he talks like a guy that, you know, that, I mean, like, I think I remember when Harry Easton was his coach, Harry was just so impressed with him because they spoke the same language, except Harry's was a little bit saltier, but
and louder,
but they spoke the same. They had the same vocabulary. It was like they cloned Harry and turned him back into an offensive lineman.
So Billy Schrauf will never be mic'd up at FightingIrish.com.
Well, he's old school, and he does have some Quentin Nelson vibes to him. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Quentin, but he's got that kind of vibe to him.
I was just thinking, going back a few years, who would use less words to answer a question, Zach Martin or Quentin Nelson? And then throw Billy in there. I guess Billy would actually say more than those two.
Billy would say more. It was just really interesting kind of throwback talk where, you know, I can't wait to get my nose bloodied or something like that. Or maybe it was doing it to somebody else. But
Zach and Quentin were quick.
Yeah.
If you're doing an interview, you better have your next question ready.
Well,
because the answer is going to come quick.
Well, the my best Quentin Nelson memory was, though, when we were at the old station, I would stop at the Martin's Deli on 23 to get dinner on my way back to the Tribune. And I was standing in line, and Quentin Nelson and Alex Bars come in through the door there, the side door deli, with a shopping cart already with them and a dog sitting in the shopping cart. And I'm just cracking up. Alex Bars kind of waves to me. Quentin grunted at me. And nobody told them they could not have the dog in the store. It was awesome.
Yeah, can you imagine someone going up to Quentin? It's like, I'm sorry, you cannot have that dog in there. I'm not saying he would be mean, but he would just look at him and be like, and yeah, just keep on going. He was awesome and still is awesome. He had a birthday earlier this week. All right, let's just go to the defensive side of the football, and let me just swing a question your way about a guy I'm intrigued with, and that's Joshua Burnham, who we found out watching the Sun Bowl and the practices leading up that he is a guy, if need be, could play both defensive end spots. So do you see him settling into one defensive end spot, or is he someone that you can see throughout the season dabbling in both spots? When I say dabbling, I don't mean just filling a spot, but being a factor.
I think ideally they would love for him to stay at that field end spot, which is the new spot for him. And I think after talking to Al Washington today, the defensive line coach, you got the sense they feel pretty good about the young guys coming up behind Jordan Batello, especially Boubacar Traore. That's the guy that's really ascending quickly. Josh Burnham would tag team with RJ Oben, who is the transfer from Duke, the grad transfer from Duke at the field end spot. He's just a really good looking athlete. He's gotten so much bigger. He's 6'4". He's in the mid 250s now.
You talking about Oben?
I'm talking about Burnham.
Burnham
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A high school quarterback who was recruited as a linebacker, one of the highest ranked linebackers, but he just grew out of the position. And Al Golden all along thought this guy's going to be a defensive end, and it's coming along. I mean, he has faith in the coaching staff that this is going to work out good for him. But I mean, he's moved twice. You know, he's moved to Viper end. Yep. He's moved to field end, and it's not just subtle little differences between those two sides. They have very different responsibilities and strengths and so forth, but I envision him being a strong contributor for Notre Dame this year.
Last week, I had Connor O'Neill on the program, who covers Duke and Wake Forest football and basketball. He's terrific, and he had some awesome responses to talking about Sam Hartman and Riley Leonard and RJ Oben. In fact, maybe I'll bring the audio back, and I know you've talked to him about this, but he was pretty blunt in saying when he heard Riley was coming to Notre Dame, he didn't like the match, mainly due to Jared Parker.
Yeah.
But when he heard Mike Denbrock was coming, all of a sudden said, this is perfect.
Yeah.
For Riley Leonard. And he also said about Oben, he felt like Duke overused him, that RJ might be better mixed in with a good group of defensive linemen where he doesn't have to play a majority of the snaps. He might be better because of reduced opportunities on the field.
I do think it maximizes. It's funny talking to sometimes guys that cover the NFL because they'll ask you about prospects on Notre Dame and you say, well, in their rotation, he goes, well, why aren't they playing every snap? You know, and it's like, that's not how it works in college. You know, in the rosters are bigger and they're going to run fresh linemen in. But yeah, I think I could see that. And you look at that field end spot and there's a lot of intriguing players who haven't proven themselves at Notre Dame. RJ Oben, Josh Burnham switching sides, Bryce Young, the 6 foot seven, 250-pound freshman. It's like, oh, wow, this could, if all those tumblers line up, that could be a pretty good position for them. But I agree. I think RJ Oben, you know, getting into a rotation will help him maximize his reps that he is in there.
I guess I should ask you, did anybody on defense impress you in stretching?
Well, somebody impressed me walking in the door.
Oh, okay.
And that was Gabe Rubio. Gabe Rubio is out for spring practice due to quote-unquote personal reasons, and Notre Dame lets you read into that. It's a privacy issue, but he was at practice today watching, and the other defensive linemen were talking about how great it was having back. It sounds like he's going to be around to watch spring practice.
Okay.
So, and Marcus Freeman had already said he's expecting him back in the summertime being on the roster. So that'll be a big addition.
Big, big boost. More help for that very talented.
But who impressed me today?
Stretching.
Stretching.
Joking. No, yeah. Anything. I'm kidding.
Well, I mean, this was the first time we got to see some of Jordan Clark because the first practice he was limited with a quad pull. Spring break cured that for him, so he was out there today. Now, again, we didn't get to see competitive periods of him going against wide receivers, but he moved well. I'm really curious to see what his physicality is like. So once they get into the pads and we get into one of those practices, I'll give you an update, but he moves very well.
Eric Hansen, publisher and editor at InsideIndySports.com. Darren Pritchett with you. More from today's practice. Check out Eric's website, InsideIndySports.com. Our third and final opening topic for tonight's program. I do want to shift gears and talk about the other team that you cover at InsideIndySports.com. And that is Nielle Ivey's Irish women's basketball team, a number two seed in the Albany Regional for the NCAA tournament. No surprise, they are hosting the first two rounds with the first game Saturday at 2:15 against the 15 seed out of the MAC, Kent State. And they'll play again Monday if they win, or should I say when they win. They'll play Monday at a time to be determined,
right,
against either the 7 seed Ole Miss out of the SEC or from the Big East, the 10 seed Marquette. Before I dig into some thoughts on what's ahead for this Irish women's basketball team, let me take a step back, Eric, and ask you about Sunday. There were thoughts that going into the ACC tournament, Notre Dame was a 4 seed, maybe a 3. They go out and win the ACC tournament, and all of a sudden they vault up to a number 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. I asked this question last night. I'll ask you as well. Would you rather be a 2 seed like they are in the South Carolina bracket where they're undefeated and beat Notre Dame by 29 points earlier this year? Or would you rather be a 3 seed in another region to get away from South Carolina?
Yeah, well, I would rather draw away from South Carolina and not have to face them until the Final Four if you got that far.
Especially with a 6-player rotation.
Right, especially with a 6-player rotation, although maybe playing them with South Carolina only having one day of prep might help you a little bit. South Carolina, if you look at their stats on the NCAA statistics site, it looks like a typo. They're like one in everything. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Offensively, it's, defensively, the only thing they're not good at is free throw shooting. But, you know, I think Neal felt like being a two was a feather in their cap and a testament to how hard they played. And you're going to have to play South Carolina sometime. I do think I would have rather drawn away from them. But you're right. You know, we talked last week. If you're a two or a three, you're kind of playing the same caliber teams. You're just switching jerseys. And,
absolutely.
But it's good not to be a four and have to play the one in a Sweet 16 game. So I think, you know, at least being three or a two, that was advantageous to Notre Dame.
So what would you consider a really good tournament for the Fighting Irish? And maybe we can categorize your thoughts based on how far they could go in the tournament to live up to what you would consider a really good tournament run.
You know, I think, you know, they've been to the Sweet 16 each of the last 2 years. The Neal's first year as head coach, they didn't make the tournament. And that was the COVID year. It was kind of wonky anyways. But I think they need to get to the Elite Eight to call it a good run. If they get to the Final Four, then they're playing with house money. At that point, especially with the shortened rotation. And I'll tell you, it'll come in right away in Monday's game. It'll play into the challenge of each of those teams, whether it's Ole Miss or Marquette for different reasons. Ole Miss is a big team. They got a lot of size. They're awful three-point shooters, but they have a ton of size. They're one of the best rebounding programs in the country. And they get you in foul trouble. They go to the line an average of 23 times, so they can get you in foul trouble quick. So Notre Dame's got to play in that zone, and Nat Marshall's got to, and Wes Bell have to stay out of foul trouble.
Straight up.
If they play Marquette, it's the opposite. Not overwhelming size, but one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, although they couldn't shoot anything against Connecticut. They scored 29 points in the Big East tournament against them. That was crazy. But Notre Dame's zone is pretty sticky. If they don't have to also worry about an interior player, they can get out and cover the shooters. They're pretty good with Sonia Citron's length and Hannah Hidalgo's speed. They're pretty good with it. But each of those teams, if you have Kylie Watson, you got that one extra body. You can play a little man on Marquette. I don't think you can play man defense with Marquette with as few players as Notre Dame has. They do get Becky Obinma back, but Becky hasn't played a whole lot of meaningful minutes this year, the grad transfer from Pepperdine.
So you answered what would be a really good tournament for the Irish by saying, and I'm paraphrasing, Elite Eight, and then anything after that is gravy.
Yeah.
Is your answer different to this question? What is the realistic ceiling for this year's team? Same answer?
South Carolina is so dominant, and I mean, they would have to have their C game for anybody to beat them. Now, there's been teams that have come close at different times against them. Ole Miss wasn't one of them in the SEC play, but there have been teams. North Carolina gave them a real good game. North Carolina, who was kind of middle of the pack in the ACC, in a deep ACC, gave them all they could handle. Yeah. Tennessee almost beat them in the SEC tournament, and Tennessee is a team that Notre Dame beat. But they have everything. They have size, they have three-point shooters, and they have a great point guard. So I think the ceiling is the Elite Eight. I mean, if Notre Dame got to the Final Four, then what's going to keep them from winning it at that point?
True.
Because they would have beaten the best team. Now, again, Caitlin Clark's probably going to be in the Final Four. Wow, wouldn't that be an amazing matchup, Caitlin Clark against Hannah Hidalgo?
That would bring some eyeballs to the TV set.
That would bring some eyeballs to the TV set.
There's no doubt about that. Wow. And you know what? South Carolina's pretty good in a scuffle, too, as we found out against LSU.
That was crazy.
Oh, my gosh. They're down a few players for the first round, aren't they, for that first game?
I believe
so. For leaving the bench?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, when you're playing a 16, I think they'll do okay.
You can follow coverage of the Irish women's basketball team in the NCAA tournament. This guy will be covering them at Purcell Pavilion. Eric Hansen, check it out at InsideNDSports.com.
We'll take a timeout. 5:36 is our time. We're just going to have a wild card segment. We'll see where we go. We might talk football. We might talk brackets. Who knows where we'll go. Conversation starts in a moment on WSBT.
Notre Dame football coverage continues now.
What's the score?
Nothing, nothing.
Who's winning?
The Bears.
Co-hosting this hour is the publisher of InsideNDSports.com, Eric Hansen.
He bad as Captain Clay. He bad as Sugar Ray. He bad as now who that? You, the new boy has Mike Tate. Look like a bulldog. He bad as him too.
Here's your host, Darren Pritchett.
I don't know who that is.
5:41 at WSBT. He's Eric. I'm Darren. Great to have you with us. So have you heard the story about Dan Monson? You might remember him. He was the head coach at Gonzaga when Gonzaga became a cool thing. Went to Minnesota. Didn't have great success.
Right.
Well, he's been the head coach at Long Beach State, I think, for 17 years.
I did not realize that.
Before their conference tournament, he got fired. But they let him continue to coach. And guess who won the conference title? Long Beach State. So they're in the NCAA tournament. And this is perfect music, really, for this. Unfortunately, the NCAA, who hosted the press conference today involving Monson at the regional site, he had an opening statement, and it was in regard to he's basically working for free right now. So the audio eventually gets turned up, but this is how Monson started his press conference as not an employee of Long Beach State. He's just working for free this week.
Yeah, I don't have to answer anything I don't want to because I'm working for
free today. So... it's like you guys see the Seinfeld when George Costanza was trying to get fired and couldn't lose his job and still going to work every day, and that's me. Is it an opening statement? Was that it? What do we got going?
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it, Coach. We'll go ahead and start with questions.
How about that for a bizarre circumstance? You get fired, but the university decides to let you coach out the season, and your team wins the conference tournament. So truly, he is working for free this week in the NCAA tournament.
That's amazing.
That deserves Curb Your Enthusiasm music underneath,
wow,
to say the least.
I'm going to root for them.
Absolutely.
And not Virginia.
Oh, my gosh. Boy, that was painful. They missed 19 consecutive shots last night. And I know it was controversial. They even got into the first four. I mean, their net ranking was not very impressive. I know it's about resumes and this and that, but I'm sorry. What are you supposed to do when you're from Terre Haute, Indiana, and nobody will come to your building and play, and most schools aren't going to schedule you? So you can only do what you can do, Eric. And Indiana State was a wonderful basketball team. I have been a honk for the Missouri Valley for so many years. I loved it as a kid. I was a Big Ten guy, but I loved the Missouri Valley. Back when Hersey Hawkins was at Bradley and Xavier McDaniel was at Wichita State and on and on and on. There's been some just glorious players. I mean, way, way back, good old Walt Frazier was at SIU Carbondale. So it's a wonderful conference. Larry Bird at Indiana State. And, folks, I'm telling you, Indiana State was a terrific team. Drake beat them in the Valley Championship game. And Drake is a wonderful team, led by our old AD, Brian Harden, who used to be the sports information director, I guess, when Coach Weiss was here, and maybe another coach along the way and filled in for Bob Diaco at award ceremony. But that's a story for another day. Okay, Bob Diaco won an award, our old defensive coordinator, and the award show had a close-up shot of Brian Harden sitting there with Bob Diaco's name underneath. He had this look on his face like, hello, how y'all doing? Freddy Krueger. But anyway, but Drake's a team. But Indiana State was a terrific team. I just don't know what they're supposed to do. They had the best net ranking ever to not make the tournament. They were 29 in the net ranking. And it just seems like they got robbed. Absolutely robbed.
Well, certainly in retrospect, I think, Mishawaka High School could have shown better than Virginia last night in the NCAA tournament.
Unless it was Mishawaka in the third quarter against Fort Wayne Wayne last Saturday. Other than that, yes, but they kind of were Virginia in the third quarter. They were up 9 at halftime, and when the third quarter ended, we were down 11 points. So we were kind of Virginia for 8 minutes, unfortunately.
Those were really good teams, though. I mean, Virginia was playing a team that was seeded the same as it in the first four. I mean, they were playing another 10 seed.
Colorado State was a team that should have been ranked better than what they were. They had a terrific resume. The Mountain West, they've got some teams, and I hope they show up in the NCAA tournament, because you know what happens. If a conference has a great regular season and they stink it up in the tournament, they didn't deserve it. Because the regular season doesn't mean anything to so many people, and it drives me bizarre. And you know what? Who's the poster child for that? The Purdue Boilermakers. They had a wonderful season last year. They got stunned by FDU in the first round. They become a punchline. And now here we go again. They're one of the elite teams in college basketball. And Eric, it stinks that so many people are going to judge Purdue's season on the next 3 weeks, not what they accomplish during the regular season. And that frustrates me. I get it, but at the same time, I'm not living in that world.
Well, I'm sure Matt Painter would love to have both worlds. So I was laughing at the Mountain West thing. I interviewed Rick Majerus years ago when he was at Utah.
Sure.
And Utah was in the Mountain West before they were in the Pac-12, and now they're going to be in the Big 12. But he's like, this is a really good league. He goes, the only reason we don't get more publicity is because all of our fans are in the Federal Witness Protection Program. And then ones that aren't are goats, as in the animal, not greatest of all time.
I'll tell you, when I was around St. Louis producing at KMOX, the Billikens had two beauties, Rick Majerus and Charlie Spoonhour. And they were great quotes.
Yeah.
Majerus was just a beauty, an absolute beauty, and almost became Notre Dame's coach.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Just
it didn't happen.
Didn't work out. He was a...
Well, because of the book, My Life on a Napkin, he saw an excerpt, or the president of the university saw an excerpt of it and said, nope, nope.
But his resume was solid.
His resume was amazing. He was amazing. Yep.
He would have done a great job here.
He would have done a great job. Brought a lot of life to Notre Dame basketball. But I do think that they hired the right coach now for this time.
Yes.
Micah Shrewsbury, I think, is going to do a really good job with them. It's going to take a little while. They're not going to be competing for national championships yet, but they're going to be better next year.
I love the edge that he has.
And they beat the tar out of Virginia, too.
They sure did. When we thought Virginia was good at that time. Now it's coming in.
Yeah, Colorado State and Notre Dame. Well, you know what? I mean, they've come a long way from losing to a bad Citadel team.
You bet. You bet. And I love the edge of Micah. He's not afraid to be bristly. And
he reminds me of the Big Ten coaches when I covered Big Ten basketball.
Amen.
In the heyday of the Big Ten.
Judd Heathcote,
Gene Cady,
Bob Knight, yeah. Lou Henson.
It was that. He's out of that mold.
George Raveling.
Dr. Tom
Davis, not my favorite. Or Bruce Pearl. Take a hike, pal. Indiana, don't ever do that. Don't bring Bruce. You've already got burned with Kelvin Sampson. You don't want to go down that road with Mr. Pearl. All right, 5:49, we'll take a timeout. Twitter question of the day coming up in a moment here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
This is the Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat Twitter question of the day from Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Well, we've gone a little basketball this week with our Sports Beat InsideIndySports.com Twitter question of the day. By the way, he's Eric Hansen, publisher and editor at InsideIndySports.com. I'm Darren Pritchett. Yesterday on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat, you were answering this question. Which NCAA men's basketball tournament number one seed is least likely to make the Final Four? Is it the Houston Cougars, the Purdue Boilermakers, the Tar Heels of North Carolina, or the defending champion, Connecticut Huskies? Eric, you have not spent a lot of time on your bracket. Do you want to play or pass?
I'm going to play. Okay. I answered this. I said North Carolina, I thought, was the least convincing.
Okay. We'll see if you're in the majority.
Okay.
Here is how the vote wrapped up. Not a surprise, fourth place, 4.6% of the vote. The number one overall seed, Danny Hurley's UConn Huskies. Third in the voting, Kelvin Sampson. And the Houston Cougars only got 14.8% of the vote. Wow, interesting. Second, the North Carolina Tar Heels at 33.2%. And according to the vote, the number one seed least likely to make the Final Four is the team actually with the easiest road this year, in my opinion. The Purdue Boilermakers got 47.3% of the vote. Is that just recency bias from getting thumped by a 16 seed last year?
No, it's, I think, Purdue's history in the NCAA tournament. Gene Cady had some really good teams that either had a killer bracket or they had to play Memphis on their home court, or back when you could do that, or they just didn't rise to the occasion. But I think their whole history, their people that followed them decades ago that still remember that. So I figured Purdue would be the winner there, but I do think North Carolina's the one.
But it's not like Notre Dame fans are anti-Purdue, because most people who follow me are Notre Dame fans, so it's not like there's something against Purdue. I think they've gotten bitten by
they probably lost a pool before because they picked Purdue to go along with. They're like, I'm not getting burned by them again.
Here is today's question, which you can find on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. Who wins the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament? Two choices. I'll give you UConn or Purdue, one of those two. Or your second choice is the field. So who will win the championship, UConn or Purdue? That's your first choice. Or the second choice is the field. And we're down to 66, so you get 64 other teams as we speak right now.
Well, I mean, wasn't the last time Purdue made a Final Four?
1980.
Lee Rose was their coach. That was before Gene Cady. And how many back-to-back champs have we had in men's basketball?
Florida was the last one about 20 years ago.
So I'm going with the field.
Okay, very good. We'll find out the votes on Monday because we are off the next 2 days because of the NCAA tournament. We'll wrap up the show, at least for this hour. What's coming up at InsideIndySports.com?
Well, I've got two stories up right now. One is on Charles Jagaza, the sophomore-to-be left tackle. Really interesting story about the injury he overcame and how he got to be at the top of the depth chart and what he's doing to try to stay there. I have a story on Hannah Hidalgo being just the fifth first-team All-American in the AP since there has been an AP.
Wow.
All-American, which seems like a really low number for as many good players have been at Notre Dame. We have video highlights from today's practice. The Kate Koval story we talked about at the beginning of the hour, and much, much more, including Tyler's practice notes.
Thank you, sir. Greatly appreciate it. Again, you get a day off tomorrow because of our March Madness coverage. So I will talk to you next week.
Sounds great.
And enjoy covering the Irish women this weekend.
I will.
Follow Eric at InsideIndySports.com. All right, coming up in a couple of moments, we've got a sports update and 30 more minutes of Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat continues on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. WSBTRadio.com, the WSBT radio app, and on Twitch, as Darren Pritchett talks Notre Dame football recruiting with Blue and Gold Illustrated insider Mike Singer.
And our conversation also available on the Blue and Gold YouTube channel. We would love for you to subscribe to the Blue and Gold YouTube channel and like this conversation with Mike Singer, the Notre Dame football recruiting insider, Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Well, Mike, it finally happened. Jerome Bettis Jr. this week picked the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Obviously, a legacy and a big deal for the Fighting Irish.
Is he a legacy, Darren?
I think so. Does that name
Jerome Bettis ring a bell? Sounds kind of familiar, I suppose. Of course, his father, Jerome Bettis Sr., Pro Football Hall of Famer and one of the most beloved Notre Dame figures. In the program's history and just really the university's history with You know, with him coming back and getting his degree, would that have been, what, a couple years ago, Darren? A really neat story. So Sunday was Pot of Gold Day, which Notre Dame does on every St. Patrick's Day. It's their built-in holiday. They use it on the recruiting trail. They offered, I believe, 82 or 85, something. It was in the low 80s in terms of new prospects offered, a crazy amount of players that they offered. And then last year for Pot of Gold Day, they offered Jerome Bettis Jr., a wide receiver from Atlanta Woodward Academy, 6'3", 185 pounds. And on the year anniversary of his offer, he announced his commitment to Notre Dame. Picking the Fighting Irish, he had offers from Missouri. Let me pull up his offer list, Darren. I know Texas A&M, he visited actually before announcing his commitment. Arkansas, Central Florida, Purdue, Cal, Duke, Louisville, Boston College, NC State, Ole Miss, Kansas. So it's a pretty strong offer list for Jerome Bettis Jr. Not ranked super high. He's a three-star across the board, number 700 overall. Excuse me, 703 overall player in the country, number 113 receiver. Not very – again, it's not a robust ranking right now. But and talking to sources on the Notre Dame side of things, like, look, they, from what I understand, the Irish staff is like, look, you know, we know what the perception is going to be about Jerome Bettis Jr. picking Notre Dame. But there's a couple things to understand here. One, look at that. There is a strong offer list. That is powerful. That is many power conference schools after him. Two, you put up, like, the film, Darren, he's got really good size and length, and he looks confident catching the football. For folks watching on YouTube, this is film that I took of seeing him last fall. He looks good as receiver. When you watch his junior tape, he looks excellent at safety. I mean, him coming down in run support at 6'3", 185 pounds at the safety position, I think looks really good. You see him coming up and making a tackle. Again, for folks watching on YouTube on that play, Notre Dame's like, look, you know, again, we understand what people might think, but there's some traits here that has the Fighting Irish staff excited. Like, this is definitely a player whose last name wasn't Bettis I could see the Irish taking because of all of his attributes that he brings. Not only at receiver, I think he could be a strong outside boundary receiver for the Irish, but also he looks good on safety. I think he can contribute on special teams. I think this is a solid get for Notre Dame, landing Jerome Bettis Jr.
Am I correct? He's on a loaded offense, so his numbers may not look as flashy as some other recruits.
Yeah, I believe it was a 15-game season. He only had 30 receptions, but you know he's also playing defense, so you got to take that into account. He's playing both ways, and then the two leading receivers ahead of him was a Wake signee who I was talking to the head coach there and. Defense coordinator at that high school, and he was like, I think that kid probably should have ended up at Notre Dame. Actually, he was like, I think Notre Dame should have offered him, and then the other one is committed to Florida for this class. So, yeah, it was a state finalist team, so it's not like he's playing for some scrub team and he's still not getting the ball. Like, no, he's playing for one of the best teams in the state of Georgia.
So that's a conversation on a 2025 commitment. Now we go to 2026, and Mike, I guess we've broken the seal on commitments for that particular class with a very familiar last name.
Yeah, back to back here, huh? Jerome Bettis Jr. Now Dylan Faison. So he got his offer from Notre Dame on Pot of Gold Day, again, just on Sunday. And then the next day he announces his commitment to the Fighting Irish. I was told he called the staff that morning. Last name Faison sounds familiar. His older brother is Jordan Faison. So Jordan Faison walks on the team as part of the 2023 recruiting class. And then you see him, you know, bust onto the singles at the Louisville game. He caught the touchdown and he gets his scholarship. Now he's dominating on the lacrosse team. And then Notre Dame goes out and says, hey, Dylan Faison, 5'11", 170-pound receiver in the class of 2026. I believe it's Lacrosse Magazine ranks him as the top player in that sport in the country for his class. And, Notre Dame goes out and offers Faison, gets his commitment. No other schools have offered him. And with Jordan, his older brother, one school had offered him, and that was Iowa. So, yeah, these guys, for whatever reason, just flying under the radar, Darren, and it's really been to Notre Dame's game. So I don't know how they found Jordan Faison. I don't know if that was a lacrosse thing that the lacrosse Notre Dame coaches brought, you know, Jordan Faison to their attention. But whatever it is, like, Jordan's a fantastic wide receiver. And then Dylan, I mean, he's got some real skills as well. And you know, obviously has a similar feel to his game as older brother. Overall, you know, it's a strong commitment. Class of 2026, it's early, but Notre Dame feels really good about their evaluation here.
I don't think there's a lacrosse coach in the country that gets more excited about football recruiting than Kevin Corrigan at the University of Notre Dame. Amazing, the crossover between the two programs right now. Mike Singer talking Notre Dame football recruiting on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat and on the Blue and Gold YouTube channel. With spring practice, of course, going on, probably a pretty good weekend for some visitors.
Yeah, Notre Dame's got a ton of visitors on campus, Darren. We're about to talk about four of the main ones. Of course, you can go to blueandgold.com for much more coverage of Notre Dame's recruiting weekend. I'll have a visitor preview posted. We'll have a show with Kyle Kelly on Friday afternoon that folks can watch or listen to the podcast version of it. We'll definitely preview this weekend. So I'm just going to go through four of kind of the names to know. Modern day high school, even for Darren, you call yourself a novice recruiting follower, you probably know the name Modern Day High School in Southern California. It you know, pumps out so many top talents. You know, Bryce Young, the Panthers quarterback, you know, that's one of the more famous players from Modern Day. But so many players, you know, top high school athletes come from this high school, one of the top overall programs in the country. So Notre Dame has not had great success at Modern Day in recent years. You had to remember C.J. Williams committed a couple years ago. He ended up flipping to USC, and then he ended up transferring to Wisconsin, of all places. So Notre Dame hosting Chuck McDonald. We'll see if they're able to flip some fortunes at this school. It would be a nice one to get a pipeline at. He's a 6'1", 180-pound cornerback in the 2025 class, four-star player across the board. Considered a USC lean. This is McDonald's first trip to Notre Dame coming up this weekend, so a pretty big deal. We talk all the time about this 2025 cornerback board on our show, Darren. McDonald's not one we talk about more often. The next guy we'll discuss in a second is one we discuss almost every single week on this recruiting update. You know, Dallas Golden, we'll talk about Jameer Joseph, the New Jersey corner, who's officially visiting this summer. We don't talk about McDonald a ton, but visiting this weekend. And Darren, we say this all the time. Notre Dame's just a place that if you go there and it clicks, you don't need more visits.
Yeah.
Like, you just kind of know. If you know, you know. So we'll see if that's the case with McDonald this weekend, because going into it, it does feel like the Irish are on the outside looking in. Talked about, you know, hey, we're going to discuss this other corner in a second, and it's Mark Zachary from Indy, Ben Davis, top 100 overall player, Indiana strong 2025 recruiting class, the number one player in the country per the industry ranking at On3, is Damian Shanklin from Warren Central. Number two player in the state is Mark Zachary. Considered a Notre Dame lean, I think, Darren, this visit is going to be key. He's got more unofficials lined up. He's got officials lined up in the summer. A sneaky development could be, what if he just gets blown away this weekend and that's it, and he just wants to go to Notre Dame? That's something to watch. Don't know if that will happen. He's got other things lined up, but I do think either way that this could be a big kind of development for the Irish to take a step, even big of a step forward. I think Notre Dame leads there. Can they take a bigger lead? Derek Meadows is a huge one, Darren. Top 100 overall player in the country, 6'5", 185-pound receiver. Notre Dame offered him last summer after seeing an Irish invasion. We've talked about him on this update, Darren, for the past, 10 months, 9 months, whatever it's been, as a huge charter for the Irish. And now, in the past 2 months, every one of their brothers offering this prospect. I mean, he has blown up. Alabama, Georgia, Michigan, tons of schools are after him. But Notre Dame has kind of the ability to say, hey, we offered you back in June when you had like three other offers. It wasn't very many at that point. So he's been to campus twice already. He'll be on campus this weekend and then returning in June for his official visit, a big one to watch. And then 2026 quarterback recruiting is in an interesting spot. There's a few candidates on the board who I'm looking at. Like, I could see them popping for the Irish in the next few months. Noah Grubbs is one of them. This will be his third time on campus. 6'3", 210 pounds, four-star prospect from Lake Mary in the Sunshine State. It's in the Orlando area, I believe. He's visiting campus. Could be a really interesting one. He's got spring visits lined up. But the feeling I'm getting, Darren, is that while none of these quarterbacks are saying, oh, I want to commit this spring to a school, I'm talking about the ones that are on Notre Dame shortlist, I just get the sense that one of these guys is going to want to lock up that spot, be Notre Dame's 2026 quarterback. Could it be Grubbs? Could it be Brady Hart, who I logged a prediction for earlier this week at Blue and Gold to end up at Notre Dame? He's going to visit in early April, and then midweek next week, a quarterback by the name Troy Hunn will be visiting Notre Dame. So, again, I did log a prediction, Brady Hart from Coco, the passer in the Sunshine State, four-star player, number 109 overall and number 9 quarterback in the country, 6'5", 185. So, again, quarterback recruiting, no one's like, hey, I'm committing at this date, nothing like that. But I just get the sense that Gino Guidulli has put this board in such a good position that one of these guys is going to, you know, jump on the opportunity soon. Like, we've seen in the past, the Irish kind of, you know, leaning later commitments at the quarterback position, not this cycle. Gino's done a really good job building out the board, getting these guys on campus. It'll be interesting to track, my friend.
All right, let's go to the defensive side of the football. And Jadon Blair, a safety, he has set a visit date.
Yeah, so we had this news at Blue and Gold this morning. Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Mount Tabor, 6'4", 180-pound safety. We love these long safeties. I feel like Kyle Hamilton, he just gets pointed to. Like, when you have these big, tall, long safeties, they all mention Kyle Hamilton. Notre Dame's, you know, been able to attract some of these types of players. So Jadon Blair visiting Notre Dame, it was April 3rd through the 6th. So I'm sure he'll get in at some point on the 3rd, be able to maybe get dinner with the coaches, 4th and 5th, get the full visit experience, see practice, and then head out on the 6th. It's a pretty big one because Penn State, it's felt like the Nittany Lions have taken the lead in that recruitment. The Penn State side of things feels more confident at this point, kind of from what I gather behind the scenes. But Notre Dame's going to get him on campus for a few days in early April, and that's the unofficial, that the Blair family, it's on their dime, and then he's returning in June for his official visit at Notre Dame. You know, that's the all-expenses-paid one. So, Darren, it's been 5 official visits that these players get to take. That's been the thing for the longest time. Now it's unlimited. The players can take as many official visits. You can only go to a school once for your official, but you can take a bunch. So he's got 7 official visits locked in from late May to late June. So it's going to be very busy. Some midweek trips, including one to Notre Dame, June 11th through the 13th. So, and talking to sources on the Notre Dame side of things, the feeling with Blair is that you get him in early June, you get him in early April, you get him in June on campus. You at least have a puncher's chance, and it is more than a puncher's chance that they have. I mean, this is somebody who's visited Notre Dame a couple times before. Notre Dame has really cultivated a strong relationship with him. Chris O'Leary left for the Chargers. I think Notre Dame's still in a pretty good spot here. So might be Penn State at the top of his list, but, you know, when you're taking 7 official visits and then he's announcing a commitment in July, I mean, really, who knows where that recruitment's going to end up trending.
All right. Mike, I know your website's very busy right now with spring practice coverage, recruiting, Notre Dame women's basketball. There's stories about the men's basketball portal. And we're going to add Pro Day into the mix coming up tomorrow. So Blue and Gold is definitely the place to be.
Yeah, $1 for 2 months using the promo code UND1 for first-time subscribers. Again, special offer for our audience, Darren, $1 for 2 months using the promo code UND1. So please check that out. Lots going on, recruiting, spring ball. You mentioned Pro Day, basketball, women's and men's news. BlueandGold.com is your place to get the latest on all those news. And then, talk to thousands of other Notre Dame fans on our Loose Emoji message board.
and even a soccer story about a game coming to Notre Dame State, or excuse me, a friendly. Sorry, it's not a game; it's a friendly, right?
Yeah, sure. It's all the same. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Chelsea and Celtic. It's
cool.
It's going to be exciting, Darren. Celtic, one of the it's a big name in world football, and obviously Chelsea. It's a club that's recently won the Premier League and Champions League. It's going to be exciting. I don't think it's Liverpool come in like they did in 2019, but Chelsea Celtic is pretty darn good.
Very good. He's Mike Singer, Notre Dame football recruiting insider, Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Thanks, Mike, very much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. As always, my friend, thank you.
That's Mike. I'm Darren. Sports Beat continues next on WS.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.